Hello, and welcome to Season 3, Episode 6 of Our Voices, Our Community. Each week, we focus on issues that are important to you and our community. We discuss an array of issues in Roanoke and the New River Valley, from social to political to economics, but also arts and culture and much more. Our goal is to merge local with state and national issues that affect our lives in Southwest Virginia. On today's episode, we're going to talk about the Oscars. Yes, the Oscars. And then we're going to try to put some little culture in your life today. And we're also going to dive deeper into the Lucy Addison Middle School and how we can be as a community to support them. So let's get started. I'm Robert Jeffrey, and with me today are Will Solari.
Hello.
How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. How are you?
You know, the sun is out.
That's true.
And the rain has stopped.
For at least the next 15 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. So hopefully we can enjoy a little of the sunshine before it starts raining again. Karen Jones, how are you?
I'm good. How are y'all today?
Yeah, we's fine.
Y'all. We's. Y'all is okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I've always given Karen a hard time with that, the New River Valley dialect. And also today, we have a very special guest here, Reverend Kevin McNeil, who's president of the Lucy Addison PTSA. How you doing, Reverend?
I'm doing well.
Good.
Doing well.
Reverend, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and where you pastor at.
Originally, I'm from South Florida, so I'm a transplant. Have lived here since July of 2002. My wife's from here, and so we have raised our two sons here and pastor Bethany Christian Church here in Roanoke, which is a right off Williamson Road over by Breckenridge Middle School.
Okay.
And also am the PTSA president for Lucy Addison Middle School. Outside of that, I do quite a bit of work in our denomination with anti-racism, pro-reconciliation work, and leadership training for organizations inside the church and out. And so, you know, I keep busy, but it's a good busy.
Well, that's good. That's good. And for the record, yeah. PTSA is Parent Teacher Student
Association.
Okay. All
right. Yeah. And so in Roanoke City, some schools have PTAs.
Yeah, right. That's what I was
thinking. Some have PTSAs.
Okay.
And that's based on the way the charter was written for the individual school because they're all separate.
Okay. All right.
Interesting.
Well, good. Well, again, welcome.
Yeah, welcome.
Thank you.
We're excited to have you today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
You're good. I'm pretty sure you're going to provide some great insight on what we're going to talk about today. And so let's get started. Let's kick it off today with something light, like I mentioned before, the Oscars. The Oscars awards were Sunday night. Did you guys watch the Oscars?
We did.
You did?
Good. Certainly, yeah.
Was it 3 hours, 4 hours? I didn't see all of it.
It was long. I mean, my daughter fell asleep, you know, before we reached the halfway point. So I would say it was easily past 11 when it all wrapped up.
I try to watch it a little bit. No, I didn't watch all of it, but it's just so long.
Yeah, but you know,
it's just so long. I mean, it's just long,
right? I think. As someone who works in film and television, you get used to a film, you know, it's an hour and a half, but it takes, you know, 6 months to shoot. So I think they think they're doing good by at least getting it done in 4 hours.
Oh, wow.
So I don't think that's actually why I do it. But, you know, people have a lot to say. There's a lot to do. They got to, you know, it's like with anything. Hey, slow, fast, slow. Here's a song to wake you back up. Slow, fast,
right.
Until, you know, they get through everything.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I know that the first time ever a foreign language film, Parasite, won Best Picture along with three other awards.
Yeah, absolutely. Best director, best foreign film, best screenplay.
Yeah. Right.
I'm so looking forward to watching it because I haven't seen it yet because I didn't know, but now I can't wait.
I can say with no hesitation that Parasite was the best film I saw last year.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. It does a thing that even like past, you know, past who's the, what's the big winner for what you, the film of the year or whatever, the best film. That was hard to remember. Past best films have tried to do this, and again, they won the Academy Award for it, but I think still failed at it. It's a dark comedy, but it's not. It's also a very like brutal look at drama, and it's still not that too. And it's a very holistic look at an extremely complex issue, told in the perfect like visual language of cinema without it being too heavy-handed or too unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And it really creates very human characters in a way that I think most films that we're used to seeing are just kind of caricatures of people. Mm-hmm. You hate the bad guys as much as you love them. You don't know who the bad guy and the good guy is. And again, it does very honest views and sort of metaphors for a lot of problems in society, especially like income inequality and social inequality.
Interesting.
I think this is one of the first films that, as I was reading comments, seemed to have overall support as best picture of the year. You know, sometimes people, and I can't tell you who's won in the past, but some people will hate it, some will love it, people don't understand why.
Back and forth that happens.
Yeah, but this time it was like everything I read, people were just like, yes. Like,
absolutely, yeah.
It 100% deserved it. So,
You know, and the benchmark for me is if I can watch a film and I want to stay for the second screening of it again,
right,
and for being a really truly great film, and that was one of those. Like, I could watch it back to back to back and probably see something new every time and enjoy it just as much every time. So I mean, it was really something special.
Yeah, you're the second person I've heard say that about it, that they saw it and they were okay seeing it again. They said, yeah, I could watch it again. Thought, oh, well, then it's okay. Then I need to go figure this out, check this out, because I didn't actually hear, I didn't know anything about it until it won. Okay. And I thought, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Let me Google.
that's what happened to me. I had to Google it.
Let me Google this and see what's up.
Yeah. Well, you know, I admittedly hadn't seen Ford versus Ferrari, but really everything for the best picture was a pretty socially conscious and extremely well done film. You know, sometimes you don't get both those things together.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really, you know, people, there is a real issue of representation amongst nominees and recipients of Oscars. With that said, I think their choices this year for films, again, both hit on films that were extremely well done and also pretty progressive in their view on things. Yeah. And in the way that they portrayed, whether it was like World War One or even Nazi Germany. I mean, Jojo Rabbit is a at face value, you're like, oh, a fun film about Nazis. Like, it's not what it seems. And it's actually a really kind of heartfelt and extremely well done film. So again, I think everything on that list this year, you can't really go wrong with. Although I was told that Ford versus Ferrari is like a 2.5 hour like Viagra commercial. So maybe I'm just the wrong audience for that one.
Well, speaking of progressive, Hair Love received the best animated short.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which I think is very powerful. For them, for number one, to win that, but it says a lot about, well, you know, in the media these days, we've been talking about, especially the issues about hair, and especially in the African American culture and community, the fact that they did this animated short film about it, it's powerful and positive. And I think most of the awards are kind of a little bit political, don't you think?
Yeah. Sometimes, and you know, and again, I think they did a good job this year. You know, the best score, I'm blanking on the woman's name, but you know, it was the lady who did the score for Joker.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that it doesn't matter if you're a woman or not. Again, these kind of whatever, you know, monikers we put on people, it was a fantastic score. So not only did a woman win this year, and the second time a woman has ever won in that category in the 92 years the Oscars have been around, but again, it went to the person who really deserved that award as well.
Okay, I'm about to say something off So now hold your breath. Hold your breath.
Hold Brethren, don't hold this against us.
I don't want to show my ignorance here, but I am about to. So, when you say best score, I remember it was years ago. What was the Hustle and Flow?
Yeah.
You remember that? What was the? It was the best song.
He got best song.
Well, what was the song? It was Hard Out Here for a Pimp.
Yeah.
That was the first time when I saw that. And, you know, I know I'm digressing, but it just kicked in my mind of that best song. And that, wait, he won an Oscar.
I mean, he won an Oscar, but of all the songs.
I'm sorry.
It just kicked in.
I'm sorry.
There've been a couple of those.
Well, let me say this though. This was a curious thing about best song this year. You know, Elton John won, who is a prolific songwriter and a really fantastic musician. But as far as I could tell, he had written that song and then they used it in the movie, which is great because it was a movie about him. So that was a curious predicament because that song from like Hustle and Flow was written for that movie.
Right.
And so I think there's, not that they cheated this year or whatever, but I think part of that consideration is how well that song works being written for a film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. Yeah, it was good. Again, going back to the Hair of Love, a lot of things there was going. I think the director actually brought along the young man that was denied to graduate from high school because of the fact that he had
his locks.
Yeah. which is baffling to me
and unreal.
I mean, we had a situation. Actually, I was a little disappointed in my alma mater when Hampton University, actually President Harvey, was trying to ban the students to not to wear locks, which I was very disappointing. And him doing that, but in today's society, there's so many. When we talk about cultural diversity, and what is the norm about business attire? Mm-hmm. What is business attire here? I mean, do you have to be clean cut? I mean, I know there's a certain way we have to present ourselves in the environment, but having locks doesn't mean you can be very professional with having locks.
No, well, I think you.
I think that it's the there's a, and I said this earlier to you before we started this, that there's a stark difference between somebody wanting something to be racially or ethnically diverse and culturally diverse. And so when we're talking about affirmative action and things like that and diversity and inclusion, things along that line, we think it from the sense of ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
We want to see more black and brown bodies. We want to see more black and brown faces. We want to see, you know, this montage of differences. However, we want them, in most cases, when people are saying that, they want that, but they want it all to still act all in the same cookie-cutter way.
Right.
And so the difference of bringing my culture with me means not only do I bring my face and my skin tone, but I'm bringing my hair, and maybe bringing mannerisms and things. When my sons, the first year my sons were at North Cross, because they were at North Cross for about 3 years, it was very interesting because as they made friends with, and it was really funny because there was like a whole group of young black kids that all kind of got introduced to this new environment this year because the headmaster wanted this push for diversity. But every time I turned around, you know, I'm at the school because there's something. My youngest son, Carrington, has this curly kind of flowing. It's not the normal, what we consider black people hair.
Mm-hmm.
Well, every time I turned around, somebody was running their fingers through his hair.
I already know.
And he would have a meltdown.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's mad. He's like, don't touch my hair. You know,
right.
Here's this little kid in kindergarten who they're calling me and they're saying, well, you need to come talk to him because he's way too upset about this and we don't understand what's going on. And so I get there, well, what's happening?
Right.
And he goes, they keep touching my hair. Why are they touching my hair? Why are they touching me? You know, and so then I had to have this conversation about, yeah, okay, so his hair is not, this is not a petting zoo.
Right. It's not your toy. Yeah.
And so I think, so we have those challenges sometimes when people think, even in ministry, you know, I walk into places and people, you know, they get your resume before they get you. And, mm-hmm. and in my case, I don't help it because I do not have what we consider an Afrocentric name. Kevin L. McNeil. It's English, Irish,
yes,
and
yes.
I'm a Spanish middle name, McNeil, Lorenzo.
So
I show up, and if you haven't Googled me or something before, you know, and people go, oh, it's you, you know. And then there's a sense of awkwardness because, you know.
Not what they expected.
Right.
I get that same because I'm Karen E. Jones. How simple can you get? And then if you talk to me on the phone and then I walk in, it's like, wait a minute, none of this matches.
Right.
You know,
and so I think when you're talking about movies and music and television and all of those things, the business world, you end up with people who say, yeah, we want diversity, but that's really them saying that they want to meet their quota of having enough different faces,
Right.
But we still want you to operate as if you're this.
Right. You know, we talked last week, and I think those things are really kind of, especially those people who have, you know, some people have a slight bias they don't always recognize. Mm-hmm. And then some people, like we were talking about last week, use their First Amendment rights to put a Confederate flag on their porch.
Right.
And we have the right to, like, judge those people then, or to make, mm-hmm. you know, to filter them out, as it were. And I think you can usually always tell, you know, sometimes, like, at school, it's like, guys, come on, personal space, it doesn't even matter. The race issue is, like, a big thing. But also, like, germs right. spread like wildfire. Please, just right. personal space, keep your hands to yourself, period. And then the other thing is, like, you know, again, I think it is easy to filter these people out. You know, a kid in Texas recently got suspended because he wouldn't cut his hair, even though he was growing his hair out for a sister who had cancer.
I saw that.
So, you know, it's pretty easy when a principal or someone is like, oh, I got a problem with this or that. Like, it's definitely that person who's the problem. It's not the kids. It's not, you know. And again, if we want to be inclusive, they're like, well, we like that guy, but he's got dreadlocks and, you know, he just doesn't play enough golf. Like, yeah, that's a problem. Like, right. Again, you know, and I think hopefully, you know, always, you know, hope for the best. You know, moving forward, there'll be less and less and less than that. But again, it's one of those things I hear all the time. It's just like, well, there was a lady, she was from India, and she was just qualified this other guy. But, like, this other guy, you know, got along with the other doctors. He played golf. He da-da-da. And it's like, this is why these laws and rules exist.
Yes.
Because you don't even realize that that's a problem. Like, right. what is your ability in playing golf, or the fact that you have a traditional haircut or you present in a traditional way, have to do with your ability as a doctor, as a lawyer, as what you name it? And that happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I know my wife has locks. And she taught me not to use the word dreads because it has a different connotation to it.
Sure.
So I use the word locks, but she has locks, and we went to several social events and where we'll have people of other races and ethnicities just run up to her and just grab her hair.
Yeah, it's weird.
And say, oh, this is beautiful. And, you know, my wife politely tells her, you know, this is my hair. I mean, do not do that. But it just seemed like it's an automatic, it's just because it's something unique or different. Oh, yeah. They just feel like you just gravitate and feel like they have the right to do that, which is...
But that also filters from privilege.
Right. Mm-hmm. You're right.
You know, mm-hmm. There are some things that people do from a sense of privilege, and I would say better or worse, mostly it's worse. Other people who see it allow it because either they're afraid of that privilege or they enjoy the same privilege, so they don't see an issue with it.
Right.
Or they are somehow gaining something in that privilege. With Harvey Weinstein,
mm-hmm.
you know, you can't do what he did and not have people not know. But those people in some way
enabled it because wanted to be close to that power,
yes,
and continue to do that, yeah.
And so it was funny because I was having a conversation with my parents, and my dad said, "You know what has to happen?" I said, "What?" He said, "My generation just needs to die." He says there's too many of us old folks hanging on and clinging to life, but we keep keeping all of our mess with us. So if we don't die, our mess doesn't die. And I was like, oh, okay, I get what you're saying. Because
but the mess is still here. So when we talk about just using hair for an example, and kind of it goes back to slavery. Mm-hmm. It goes back to when, the colonists first came and encountered Native Americans, yeah. And anything that is different, the majority, wants to know more about that. But, older people dying doesn't solve the issue, because those thoughts and those beliefs are so well ingrained.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you do? Which is why we have to keep talking about it, right? Which is why movies like Hair Love is important, which I have to tell y'all, Hair Love is totally my dad, because he was single father of four girls.
God bless you. Jesus.
And I'm the oldest, so y'all already know that was rough. Rough going. But we have to continually talk about these things and be unafraid to talk about it. Tell my friends, don't be scared to ask a question if you don't know. Because number one, I know where your heart is. So I know that you're not asking me with any malicious intent.
Right.
But then I have to be reminded sometimes to not be offended by questions. And if we can't have the dialogue, then we're not going to move forward. And that's one of the things I loved about the Oscars and the movies that won. I think they show a light on just a lot of cultural things. And it was really wonderful.
Absolutely. But, and the one question, though, I did have about that, because, Fox News jumped all over Brad Pitt for making a political statement. And again, in the entertainment industry that's so focused on image and the glitz and glam and kind of sometimes superficial things, where does that leave us when we're presented with stuff like that? Because it's great that it was a platform for some of these people to say some things or to bring that kid along with dreadlocks or whatnot. But does that change the industry? And is our support of that good or bad because they're making strides, or someone's having to force them into making strides? And so I think it's always something, especially in including different people in showing a diverse, cast, a diverse, crew, whatever else. Like, where are we going to be? And, if we just keep, and again, I'm not knocking Ford versus Ferrari, whatever, but just making like the old white guy movie or our old parent movie or industry forever.
Wow. I know that, it's just a very powerful subject matter. When we talk about it, it's amazing when we talk about arts, how it relates to what's going on in our community and our lives. So, this was good. And I know that I will try to watch the Oscars in entirety next year. I'll be honest with you. It was just so, some parts of it I wanted to just fall asleep I think I did fall asleep.
They said viewers were down again and yada, yada. But the second something would happen, you could rewatch that entire award and acceptance on the internet, literally 30 seconds after it happened.
Yeah.
So just watch it that way.
Well, that's what I'll do. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Will. Well,
skip the commercials.
That's why you're here. That's why you're here.
We have Twitter.
Well, let's go on to another subject. And actually, the reason why Reverend McNeil here, again, he's president of the Lucy Addison Middle School PTSA. Lucy Addison Middle School has its fifth principal in 18 months. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And in recent weeks, the Roanoke branch of the NAACP and the PTSA called the community to action to support Jonathan Rosser, the newest principal. So, Reverend McNeil is president, and actually Jonathan Rosser, who I think is a good young brother, who's taking the helm of Lucy Addison. So we're going to have a Q&A, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Usually when we do this, we'll have a quick Q&A, and then Karen and Will chime in and ask more important questions than I probably will ask. But that's okay. So can you give us an overview of the timeline of events at Addison that has gotten to us, to where we are today?
Sure. I think you have to look back at probably the 2009, 2010 time frame. Mm-hmm. And you really need to go back then, because that was around the time frame that Ruffner was closed. The school district was redistricted. And so when that happened, a lot of people didn't really pay attention to it. And at that particular time, I was actually teaching at Fleming, and I kept asking the question, where are all those kids going? Well, what happened was when they redistrict, when you look at the population of Lucy Addison, you have kids at Lucy Addison from three different housing projects.
Wow.
And so you at Lucy Addison, 71% of the kids are all African American, but most of those kids, over 70% of those kids, come from a housing project. And so you have the two schools, actually, that, and nobody really talks about this. Lucy Addison has the bulk of their kids coming from housing projects. And at Breckenridge, the bulk of their kids are ELL, mm-hmm. English as second language. Mm-hmm. And so both of those schools really have a lot of challenges.
Right.
So at Addison, once all of that happened, and it messed up some of our elementary schools too, but Addison became a microcosm because when it happened, Addison went several years without being accredited. Dr. Johnson was there, worked tirelessly, and got the school accredited. But Dr. Johnson, and so 2 years I was teaching at Addison, and Dr. Johnson was a pretty hard-nosed dude. He believed in structure. And so one of the things that he did was he restructured how the school operated, and eventually they got the school accredited. It took a lot of work, a lot of bringing in specialists, a lot of doing extra things. But it was no secret that Dr. Johnson and Dr. Bishop were not friends. Not even close. And, you know, there were times when I had been in there and she would come down and they would get into an argument over something. But it wasn't, from his perspective, it was always he was doing what he thought what he needed to do for his school. Well, for a myriad of reasons, I had left at that point in 2015, 2016 to go to Lynchburg College. And next thing I knew, Johnson was out and he's now the principal of the governor's school. Well, what happened was they basically blew up the administration and everything at the school. So you didn't just lose one principal, you lost all three.
Oh, wow.
So you lost all the vice principals also.
Right, you lose all your vice principals. And so what ends up happening in that particular place is everybody who had been in charge of the structure of the school were gone. And so you bring in new principals, you're also bringing in new vice principals, these new assistant principals, and every time a new principal, they're starting over from scratch.
Right.
Mm-hmm. What was the thinking behind getting rid of everybody?
That's a question for Rita Bishop, to be honest. I know Ms. Jones, who was the sixth grade principal at the time when I was there, you know, she was pretty headstrong, but she was great at what she did. And so it just seemed like it was, I want to blow this up and put people in that are going to give me problems. And so what has happened from the standpoint of the students is it's, you know, what they say, the inmates running the asylum.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so you have all of these students who are in the school, but they are not, there's no oversight.
Right.
Okay. Because it's just like you and I, we start a new job, it may take you several months to get your footing in that environment and then to start to be yourself. Okay. Well, and a principal who comes in, you know, and they put you in place a couple weeks before school starts or in the middle of a school year, you know, it's very difficult to hit the ground running, and you're coming into an environment now that doesn't have its own structure anymore.
So you have this community meeting. So what developed from that community meeting?
Well, the community meeting did a couple of things that were beneficial. One, it shined a light on the school in a way that hadn't been done previously. And so we got real bodies into the school to see. And so after the that first night of meeting, we ended up with these four groups of people who had really done some strategic planning around student engagement, engagement with teachers and faculty, engagement with school administration, and engagement and community engagement, because those are the four areas we wanted to focus on.
Okay.
We wanted people to think about, you know, and we asked people, go to the group that you are going to be passionate about working with. So if your passion is student engagement, there's no need for you to be in leadership. So hit that group. And we had some people who floated between a couple of the groups because they wanted to hit some of the areas. So we ended up with a lot of good ideas, a lot of people who were willing to help us do some strategic planning about how we could not just finish the year strong, but also lay a foundation for the next year. And so it is not just shined a light, but it's also we've started to see resources starting to come into the school that were not there previously. Now, we have a lot of questions because the more you look at it,
right,
the more you start to see things behind the scenes,
yeah,
you get more and more questions. And so we have been talking to teachers and talking to support staff over the last several weeks and getting their stories, hearing their stories, finding out things behind the scenes, which just caused us to have more questions. These are things that need to be answered. But we've had a great response from the community. Mm-hmm. People are starting to come in, fill out the forms of volunteer. We're putting together a after-school program to start helping people prepare for the SOLs. Because that was one of the things I pointed out. I said, you know, we can't just be mad about the turnover in principal. We have to remember that the kids that are there still have testing coming.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got to be prepared for that.
Right.
Right. So, as you know, we mentioned before, Jonathan Rosser is the new principal, and he was appointed as principal. What do you foresee in the future of his work with the students at Addison?
What I would like to have happen is that I honestly think he needs a full year.
Okay. Full year just to be familiar with everything that's going on?
Right.
Because he was assistant principal at Hurt Park, right?
Right.
Okay.
And so this is his first year in middle school.
Middle school. Yeah.
And so for him and John A. Lee, they both came from other schools and were kind of put into this environment. And so they have been the constants. And so he really has had, you know, less than a year's worth of time by the time we get to the end of the year to really get anything enacted. Mm-hmm. And the challenge is he didn't have it at the beginning of the school year when he could have had meetings with teachers to set up things, to do things. And he has been operating under somebody else's structure, three other people's structure over the course of the school year. And then he gets handed this thing and is saying, now, okay, go make it work.
Yeah.
So I think he has the right attitude. I think he has expressed the right level of commitment, but okay, it's not enough time.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
So is your role as PTSA president, what can you do to kind of offer some of the stability at Addison?
I think some of the things that we're doing, inviting the community in, mm-hmm. One of the things that we're looking for now are former teachers or former school administrators who will be willing to volunteer time to come in. People to do two things. One, be willing to mentor or tutor kids, but two, also to be there as a resource for teachers. Because you have a school where there are almost, 30 first-year teachers?
30?
Mm. Yes. It's close to 30. I know it's at least 26 first-year teachers at the school.
Yeah, it's insane.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Right. And what nobody is talking about is there are five teachers that left during the Christmas break.
And so most of those teachers came back and their teacher was gone?
Right. And there was also one teacher that just left Friday. One of my oldest son is in eighth grade honors, and his civics teacher, he has her second period. There was an incident with a student and she left.
Wow.
And so some of it is that there's a lot of frustration with these teachers, and part of it is because without the overarching structure in the school,
they feel isolated.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And so what we've been trying to do is make the connections, and what we need are people who are willing to go in and volunteer time. You know, I try to go over at least one day a week, and last couple weeks has been 2 days a week, and sit in classrooms, walk the halls, you know, talk to people, and try to encourage the kids to do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Because I can imagine for some of these first year teachers, they do not have classroom management skills.
Right.
Because they don't have the experience.
Right.
And in some of the cases where you have the mentor teachers that were supposed to help them, those are some of the teachers that left.
Okay. Wow. Let's open it up with Will and Karen. You guys have any questions for Reverend McNeil?
Yeah, it's curious, and I'd like to get your kind of perspective on it, because, you know, again, looking from the outside in on it, if you get rid of anyone who had any experience with that school from the administrative side, you fill the school full of very inexperienced teachers, and everyone knows that because of the way that they've redistricted it, you have a bunch of kids whose probably a lot of their basic needs aren't being met at home, and are high needs once they get to school. It almost seems like they're setting up to fail. And I don't know if the school board or if anyone is providing, you know, again, Jonathan, assistance like you guys are, but it seems like, again, with a school that has those kind of needs, that would be, in my mind, it should be a priority, right?
It should be. And so I kind of got myself into a bit of hot water, because in one of my initial statements I made, in an interview with WSLS, I said, I believe that the school system does not care about the students at Lucy Addison.
I believe that the school system does not care about the students at Lucy Addison.
I mean, you look at what's going on. I mean, obviously, they're not in love.
Right. Well, so, you know, there were some people who did not take those comments very late.
Who are some of those people?
Well, Rita Bishop for one.
Well, she's a school board.
You know, there were school board members that reached out, city council persons, because I said to me it was a total system breakdown.
It is a total system breakdown. And you know what? They should be horrified that they've allowed these children to be treated so poorly, because I cannot imagine being a student and the chaos. Like, one, how do you learn? How do you feel safe? Where's your security? And how do you not feel like it's my fault, right? Like, mm-hmm. I'm imagining if I'm an 11-year-old and I've got 10 teachers in a year, well, clearly they don't like me. You know what I mean? Like,
no,
there has to be
real.
Like a lot of that going on too. So, and I'm, you know, an outsider, right? I'm not in Roanoke. I didn't go to Roanoke City Schools. But what I see and hear, they should all be pretty mad. And someone needs to hold every single one of them accountable, from the superintendent to the school board to city council. Because this, for me, like, I'm angry and I'm not even in it. So I can't imagine how you all feel about this. I think it's insane.
It really is. I said to someone, I said, you know, the challenge for me is we send our children to school with this expectation that they're going to learn and they're going to be preparing themselves to move to the next level, and ultimately there's some plan. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, but the environment is not conducive to learning, and that is not the student's fault. That is the fault of school administration.
Right.
And so when I started to push back and ask the questions and start to do research, it became very apparent to me that city council picks our school board. Yes. We don't have an electorate school board, so city council picks the school board.
Are you in favor of appointment or elect? I hate to interject, but
I know I'm in favor of an electorate.
Okay. Okay.
And so for me, the fact that the school board appears to rubber stamp everything that the superintendent says falls back on the school board, on the city council.
Right.
Because you put these people in place. And so then it's all politics and political. You know, when it comes to educating kids and their safety and welfare in the process, you know, that's not a political thing. That's not anything to be politicized.
Mm-hmm.
That is the the thing I think that has to be on the foremost mind of a superintendent and a school board and a city council, the fact that you have a school with 650 kids and the environment, in their own words, the kids, toxic. My son, my eighth, that's in eighth grade, and had 10 of his friends all wrote letters to the school board. And they gave them to the PTSA, and I took them to the school board meeting and hand-delivered them myself. And I told them, I said, you know, they say it's toxic. They're asking the questions that, as you said, what's wrong with us that we can't keep a principal? Mm-hmm. Which, by extension, is really saying, what's wrong with me?
Right. Mm-hmm.
I said, so then there's this sense of abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you are re-traumatizing people who are already victims of trauma.
Right. Right, because you know, right. in their own homes, right. they have that same abandonment issues.
Right.
And within their own homes. And now you go to school and you're supposed to learn and you have it and have those same issues. What do you think about the accountability of the school board? And I hate to put you on the spot on that, but I am going to put you on the spot. No, I mean, the accountability of the school board. Have you talked to some of the school board members, and what has been kind of their reaction to all this episode, I should say? Well, episodes.
Yeah. Well, the school board, you know, they give you the same song and dance. Oh, we're highly invested in the success of the school, and my response is always, well, prove it, because what you're proving to me is something very different.
Yeah.
And so I said, in the school board meeting where I spoke, I said, the school board is the system that this school is operating under is working for somebody. It's just not the kids.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's a curious thing about having an appointed school board. If the board members, for example, aren't from those districts, we talked about this with the bus recently, that one of the only people in school board, only one of them had a kid that actually rode the bus. So then how much of a priority is it to fix those things? And then also, like, how much skin do you actually have in the game?
Right.
Because as much as I love everyone in this world, people usually don't rise to the occasion and do something they wouldn't normally do. So I think if you had an elected school board, A, you have some kind of accountability.
Yeah.
But then also you have kind of an earnest desire, not just like, well, in theory, yeah, I think this is great. And, you know, I think the school board would be whatever. To fix those kind of things. And again, I do, you know, you're right, the buck stops with whoever appointed those people, because they're representatives of those people too. And I'm just, you know, what would you do then if we had an elected school board? How would you do that? Would there be a representative from each school? Would there be, you know, neighborhood district? What do you think, having, you know, experienced this and the current school board, what would work best?
Yeah, basically, Will is saying, if I can speak for Will, if you was King of Roanoke and you can just make instant decisions on this, how would you do it?
Everybody,
am I asking kind of the same?
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure I'm speaking for my brother here. Okay.
Real-time data on, you know, right. how this would work, right?
The superintendent, the school board, and city council would all lose their jobs immediately. And I would be replaced. I think if you're on the school board, you need to have a child or grandchild that is in the school system. And I think there need to be persons who are represented on their school board who have kids in all four quadrants. Not just be black, but you need to have someone or white or whatever, mm-hmm. Hispanic or whatever. I think we need to have true representation. I'm on the school board, but I have a child or a grandchild that is currently in the school system. Because, you know, like the chairman of the school board, I can't think, I've got his name, but the school board chair is assigned to Lucy Addison. I didn't realize that until I went to the meeting. I did not realize that each school board member is assigned four schools that they're supposed to be keeping up with throughout the school year.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That I did not know.
And when I get back to the school, the school administrator can't tell me who's the school board person assigned to their school.
Like, yeah. The more I hear, like, the angrier I get.
I'm just speechless right now.
And so my thing is, okay, if you're assigned to the school, and a part of that is you're supposed to be going into the school,
right,
talking to people and
be aware of the situation,
right? Like, how can you shake my hand and I'm really invested in this. And
You're the PTSA president. Like, I would think that you would be the first person that school board member would reach out to. I would. Like, if it were me.
Right.
But.
Wow. That's.
And so for me, none of them need are doing what they're actually supposed to be doing, which is understanding their environment, because they're making decisions based on what appears to be something political. Rita Bishop, I think, is in power. And here's the crazy thing. We live in a city where more people are afraid of the superintendent than the mayor. Just put that out there.
Sure.
Part of that is political, because what she has done since she's been in the school system is privatize it.
Oh, yeah. Because with the buses, the meals, the lunches.
Lunch meals, yeah.
Oh.
And it's all been outsourced. Yeah.
Right. And so some of the stress that is happening in a lot of some of these kids are because, and I worked with a couple when I was with TAP. I had a young man who was a student of mine at Fleming, and then his fiance, girlfriend, they eventually got married, but they had two kids, what came through youth bill. Mm-hmm. And so he was driving a school bus. She had gotten her GED and was working in the cafeteria at one of the other elementary schools. He was making $15 an hour. She was making $12 an hour. They were doing pretty good. Mm-hmm. He went from making 15 to making 11. She went from making 12 to making $7.75 because you privatized. So we came in and said, Rob, you're doing a great job, but guess what? Your job's going away, but you can reapply for your job because you're doing such a great job. Oh, but you're going to lose $4 an hour. So I asked the question, it's a city council. I said, can any of you afford to lose $16 an hour? And you do nothing wrong. So I don't know many people who can and then maintain their lifestyle.
Right. And so what really is happening is not only are decisions being made affecting the future economic impact of the city, but it's affecting it like right now in real time.
Right.
And so people feel like you can separate these things, but they all go together,
right?
It all, you know, comes together, and wow.
Well, you know, it's curious too. I mean, you TAP's a really great point. You know, there's things out there that offer a lot of resources for people who the school system doesn't apply to them yet, like you know, Head Start or early Head Start. And or people who the system has failed, like with Youth Build. And there's a lot of good lessons there about what works and what doesn't work. And I don't understand why those things are so separated, especially at a school like Lucy Addison.
Money.
You know, there's lots of organizations that know how to make this work right. And if we're just hiring the ones that are cheapest and that can't make it work, then what are they doing? Especially if 40% of the entire tax revenue for the city goes to education.
Yes.
Right. But it's all money. So we have to think, the school system doesn't want kids to drop out. So here's what they do. They mandate that you can't suspend the kid but so much, because we need him or her in the classroom a certain percentage of time, because there are federal dollars attached to their attendance.
Sure.
Which hamstrings the teacher, because, and I've been over at Addison and seen a kid who threw a chair. I'm walking in the office talking with somebody, and I always, if their kid's sitting in there, I always stop and talk to him. Wow. Hey, what's going on? What are you up here for? Hey, what are you up here for? And this kid's nothing. And they were like, oh, stop lying. And I said, well, what'd he do? They said he threw a chair in the class. I'm like, oh, okay. He went back to class. They sent him back to class. Mr. Hahn sent him back to class.
To the same teacher
that
he just
threw
the chair.
Yes.
So the lesson, too, that's being taught is that you can be disrespectful and there are no repercussions.
Right.
And so, again, we're setting up our children to fail, because how do you become a happy, healthy, productive adult if you're not given some basic?
Exactly.
And also having a safe environment as well.
Right. And so then what ends up happening is when they get to high school and they can't pass, then they will, at some point when they realize that, hey, they're not just not going to graduate, at that point I'll may send them to a TAP to go to Youth Builder somewhere.
Sure.
But that's only because as long as they're in some sort of GED program for 3 years after the date of their graduating class, the city can still count them on their roll for tax dollars.
Oh, wow.
For federal tax dollars. It's all about the money.
Sure. Yeah.
And so when you start talking about not bringing in resources, the challenge with Addison is a Title I school, which means it receives funds. If you go look at the December 10th meeting for the school board, when they do the report card, $380,000 in Title I money is set aside for Lucy Addison. So my question then becomes, and I just looked at this 2 weeks ago, and I have a meeting with the superintendent later this week. So my question then is going to be to her, what are we doing with this extra $380,000? Right. Why have we not hired more people in the school? Why are there not more warm bodies? And why are there not more issues? And another thing that nobody else is talking about is that earlier in 2019, state of Virginia decided to do away with TDT money, therapeutic day treatment money, which meant that all of those therapeutic day treatment counselors that would be in the school, mm-hmm. and at Addison there were six or seven, are no longer in the school. So you have kids with IEPs and 504s who have challenges, who might have been able to be pulled out of class and have a day treatment worker work with them. That person is no longer in the school. Mm-hmm. So you have kids who have documented issues, mm-hmm. that state this kid needs, from time to time, they need some one-on-one with somebody, but that person's not there.
Wow. So what, you know, as a community, and I know you mentioned a lot of the things that, you know, have come out of the strategic planning that you all did, and I think that is really great. And I can see where there's going to be some long-term benefits for that. But for other community members, business leaders, people that kind of aren't necessarily connected to the schools, how can we support? Like, what are the things that we can do, whether it's to shine a light on some of the issues or, I don't know, just kind of what can we do to help with this? Because what I want to see is, definitely I want Mr. Rosser to feel supported and to be successful in this. And I've had this conversation before. I feel like he's been put in a position where he's set up to fail, mm-hmm. and nobody wants that to happen. So how can others be part of a solution?
Well, one thing we've got to do is not allow voices to be silenced. Mm-hmm. One of the challenges that they have with me, persons like myself who are being vocal, is my paycheck doesn't come from city government or school system or anything.
Yeah.
So I don't. There are no barriers to keep me from saying what I need to say.
And they can't shut you up with it. And right. That's the power. I mean, that's a long conversation that I think we've talked about before, but. The fact that, you know, I'm not calling you an entrepreneur, but you, whatever revenue stream that you have, it's not coming from the powers to be.
Right.
Therefore, you can be candid about your conversations and issues with people. And that's what I was about to say with you. I mean, a lot of things you're saying today is eye awakening to me. It woke me up on a lot of things, especially what was going on in Addison. But the fact that, number one, you mentioned about, there's three projects, areas, that their kids are going into Addison. In my understanding, there's a lot of territorial,
yes.
gang. So you have basically rival gangs
that are
activity
in the school.
And you have to deal with that on top of trying to teach kids. And on top of that, you have all this. And the fact that you're saying this, brother, I applaud you on this. Jermaine, you need to keep the fight on that, because that's what we need, more people, more vocal and understanding about what is important here. I'm actually a little pissed, but that's something else to talk about.
That's a valid response.
I am, because especially you was telling me how they're treating the kids, especially kids who don't even complete school, how they're still making money off the student.
Yeah.
And the student doesn't get the education, but they still try to monetize the student, even after the student, quite frankly, has failed.
In one of those situations, if you're going to make that money, that money's there. I mean, we know that intervention, especially early on, for kids who have high needs like that, can change their entire, life outcome. Mm-hmm. It can bump them up in whatever, income class that they're already in. There's an infinite number of things that help, as long as you get that intervention early, you provide, some sort of constant in their life, whether it's, again, just a place to eat, whether it's a principal or a teacher or someone who's there for them, it can change their entire outlook on life. And if we're getting money from people that they've already failed, at least use that money to help with those kind of things. And I think that's kind of what's so dumbfounding about me. I mean, all the research is there that says, here's how we can fix this, and here's how we can make this better. And I don't know why we're not doing it. And I guess, like you said, part of the buck stops, with the right people. They're doing a superintendent search right now. And what do you think what would you hope the next superintendent would have, or the kind of qualifications that they would have when they're doing the search? Because I think it's tonight, right?
Yes. Yeah, tonight at 7:00 at William Fleming in the auditorium. I think a new superintendent coming in has to be a person, if they're not a native or rural, they have to be someone who has experienced teaching and the administration in an area where they've had to deal with some inner city kids.
A
tough environment. Mm-hmm. Because I know the last two principals that were at Lucy Addison, they came in, one from Germany, the other from South Carolina.
Right.
None of them had ever been in an environment like that.
Sure.
And so I think we were talking about a person that also has a track record of dealing with something that's tough and turning it around.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think it has to be a person that understands holistic health. Because you have to understand that part of what's going on with these kids is that there are medical issues. Mm-hmm. There are spiritual, psychological issues. It's not just that all these kids are bad kids.
Sure.
Some of these kids have serious things that need to be addressed.
Right.
And, don't get me wrong, my mom, I grew up old school, my mother, but everything is not addressed but with a paddle.
Sure.
Right.
I think you have to have a superintendent who understands that, but also understands that when you're talking about trauma-based care, trauma-informed care, that it's not that we lower the standard, we keep the standard high.
Right.
And so trauma-informed care is not about me lowering the standard. It's about me understanding the individual and then taking that understanding and using that understanding in how I respond to the individual in their moment of crisis.
Right. And that's what's, again, so mind-blowing to me about throwing in all those first-year teachers and throwing in people who don't have experience in that kind of administration or that level of administration and expecting them to succeed. I think that, you don't hire a mechanic to do dental work on you. And so why you would, again, put people who don't have this background, and again, trauma support or you name it, any issue that those kids might face in that situation, be like, well, sink or swim.
Yeah.
Is dumbfounding, because again, you're failing that teacher and you're failing the kid.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm sort of at a loss for words that happens.
Yes.
Unless it's just a complete lack of willingness to hire or spend more money for the right people, to have specialists in there, or to get to get the requirements that the school has.
Yeah.
But this can't be just a Lucy Addison issue.
It's not.
Yeah, and I think that people should look at Lucy Addison, other parents in the school system should look at it and say, no, wait a second, what's happening in my child's school?
Yes.
Like, let's, if there are issues or about to be issues, let's look at that now, because clearly what's happening is systematic.
Yes.
It's got to be all throughout, and it's a cancer. And if we don't find the cure, all of these children and our grandchildren and great-grandchildren are going to be affected by this. And so I really hope that people don't think this is just a one-off.
Right.
You know, that they look at all of it.
Right. And so I think we also have to be very honest about, we see the same sorts of things at Westside Elementary mm-hmm. and Hurt Park mm-hmm. Elementary School, those two in particular. I think we have to take a hard look at a couple of places like Garden City, a school that where I've heard people who work there talk about feeling forgotten as well.
Right.
Because they're kind of like out, those people out in the sticks by themselves. And understand that I think all of this is are pieces in a much larger picture. Mm-hmm. And that they're, like I said to Rob earlier, I said I think there's somebody who's got some grand plan on the wall in their office in some back room. And these are all pieces of it. Because, you know, you're talking about Evans, we're talking about Evans Springs. Mm-hmm. I said to Rob, I said, if that succeeds and they put those 300 housing units, where are those kids going to go to school? Mm-hmm. They're going to go to school at Roanoke Academy and Lucy Addison. Yes. As an act of gentrification, what I've heard and what I've seen based on a lot of stuff I've read and just listening to conversations with people, one of the cool things about being an introvert, you can sit in a room, people forget you're there, and they just start talking. Mm-hmm. You know, they want to move a lot of the population of Northwest in the Southeast. I live in Northwest, and every other day, somebody's, we want to buy your house. We want to buy your house. We want to buy your house.
Yeah, there are signs everywhere in that area.
I get emails. Yeah, I've got text messages. We've gotten the mailings in the mailbox. Somebody has placards stuffed on my door mm-hmm. wanting to know if I want to sell my home. And so there is this, you know, for lack of a better word, this attempt at what appears to be gentrification.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what it is, brother.
You know, where... Because, you know, going back to your earlier thing, you know, the Carilion wants to bring in all these people, and they've got to have a place to put them.
Absolutely. And, you know, I get those things, too, also, and I'm over in off Grandin. And I think that's a kind of predatory thing. You know, hey, are you in desperate need to sell your house really quick for far below what it's actually worth?
Right.
We got you. You know, you know, my daughter goes to Highland Park, and she's part of the Plato program, and it's great because they bring in students from everywhere.
Right.
And, you know, some of the issues that I may have had about diversity at the school that she's at is not an issue there because there's kids coming from everywhere. And I think it's good for everyone to be in those kind of situations. And what troubles me, again, about the sort of redistricting was, yes, you know what? Sometimes it is good to have a bunch of people who you identify with at your school because you can, you know, it's like almost a support system. At the same time, those ESL kids or again, the kids that you said that came from all those housing developments, how does that help them? You know, if you're going to put them all together and you're not going to give them the resources that massing them together like that demands, because again, you're failing them on the sense that they're getting exposure to anything else. Other kids that aren't being exposed to them and learning that there's other ways of life or there's different colors of people or you name
right.
it. And then it just becomes, I mean, like you said, it's a classist thing where, you know, mm-hmm. hey, put all the poor kids there. Mm-hmm. But all the kids who, you know, don't speak English so well over there, and but all the rich kids at Crystal Springs, and we're good. And then that seems how it, you know, I mean, I'm no expert on this, but that's how it looks from having a kid in that school system and hearing about all this.
Yeah. Well, yeah, the fact that they, I guess what irritates me now as I'm listening to all this is the fact they keep saying that they care about what's going on. They care. That is the PR speech that we hear, that they care. School board cares. And you look, and as you listen to them, and then you actually see the actions that is taking place. I mean, my Lord, I mean, you can't possibly have that come out your mouth and see the actions. And it's not just happened overnight. this seemed like it's been happening ever since for a while. You right. know, when I grew up, I went to Ruffner. And I supposed to went to Addison, but my mom actually told me I'm going to Ruffner because I'm not saying I was a troubled child, but I just might have some troubled tendencies.
I wasn't a troubled child.
I just had some troubled tendencies. And so my mom purposely put me in Ruffner because I was in the Addison district. But I'm as we're sitting here talking, man, I get more and more, I'm getting a little bit more angry about this, because especially when you see the repercussions of students after we have failed them, we're still profiting.
Yeah.
And it's us that's failing them. Yeah, these kids aren't failing because they want to fail. No. We are saying it's okay to fail, and I'm going to give you every opportunity to fail.
Right. And then I have a place for you when you fail.
Yeah.
And then we're going to make money off of it.
Right. But again, the troubling part is the information's there. You know, we mentioned Carilion earlier. You know, over at Virginia Tech Carilion, Dr. Ramey, you know, groundwork, you know, studies on early childhood intervention and how much that affects their lives. And we know it works.
Yes.
And just to go, oh, that research was done right next door and we're still going to ignore it is really, again, very troubling to me. I think the, to fail kids like that and to not have anything in place as a safety net or to facilitate the needs of students based on where they're coming from, what they're doing, what they're like, is just, I don't know, it's unconscionable. Because again, we are paying 40% of our taxes go to education. So again, I don't think they should fix everything, but you know, it's like with PTAs and the PTSA, like you have, think about all the work that those people have to do just to get schools to basically where they almost need to be at to help facilitate even the schools that are working.
Right.
And so there just has to be a better way. And again, cutting people who work for schools in favor of outsourcing stuff we know doesn't work. Mm-hmm. Not hiring the right people doesn't work. And I think that kind of the way that we pay people, we have to really reconsider. Because we talked about this on another episode. You know, historically, teachers were always underpaid because they were women, and women could have one of three jobs back in the, you know, 80s and going back. And they were usually part of a two-income household. So it's like, well, we can pay you just barely what you need to be paid because your husband's making all the money. And really, he makes the decisions. You know, that kind of like ridiculous mentality. But once we got out of that, we didn't start keep paying people what they're worth. You know, so it doesn't shock me that 30 first-year teachers go into a place where people really need to be paid to be specialists or be paid more because they have the correct experience for those kind of schools and those sort of situations.
Yeah, and Roanoke City does not do a good job of onboarding teachers so they're prepared. Mm. I asked teachers, I said, how did they prepare you for Lucy Addison? What was that like during your orientation? They said, they put us on a bus. They drove us around the city. This is Lincoln Terrace. This is where many of your students will come from. Literally.
So they were just like, to your left.
Yes.
So they just showed a map.
Right. Oh. They showed them, as they drove around the city, showed them the different neighborhoods. And so I said, well, did you actually talk to people? Like, did you guys get out? Like, nope, we didn't even get out the bus. We just rode around, and then they went up to the Star to take the picture that they put on the website.
The Star?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, wow.
Well, you know, we have those kind of programs where if you work in the kind of correct field for X amount of time, you know, you get student debt forgiveness and whatever else. You know, I think they should incentivize those kind of things even further with public schools and say, listen, here's a high need school, and we're willing to pay for your master's, whatever additional education and training you need to help facilitate that if you go work there for 3 years or whatever else. I don't know if those programs exist, but it seems like an easy fix for those kind of things.
They do. And Addison is one of the schools where you can qualify that because it's a Title I school, where if you work for the school, I want to say it's either 7 or 9 years, because my first year at Addison, I did a lot of reading and math remediation, but my first year I was attached to sixth grade in specific, and with those sixth graders, I was always in and out of the math and English classrooms, and what the math teachers was talking about. I can't wait till next year. I hit my target year, and I was like, oh, really? And she said, yeah, if you, that's the only reason I'm still here.
Okay, but she was trying to get,
you know.
That hurts my feelings, though, that, like,
I think I just saw her a few weeks ago.
Yeah. I'm not going to say she wasn't there for her love of teaching, but it was probably so frustrating for her anyway in the environment that that was the only thing keeping her there.
Well, let me
ask you. That's sad.
Let me ask you something. I might go back a little bit. I remember when decades ago, I guess, I hate to say that, when I was in junior high or middle school, Addison was a magnet school, aerospace school. I'm always curious, when I came back, I realized that it was gone. What happened? Do you know what happened to that?
The stories I was told was that the school board never invested the time, effort, or energy or resources into keeping up with the technology. And so because they did not do that, they just decided to close the program.
Oh, good.
Wow. Makes sense. All
right. And so what
40, Will, that's 40%.
Here's the kicker. When it was a magnet school, there were kids that paid to go to Lucy Addison because it was a magnet school.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that, yeah.
And so not only were you getting extra money from the tuition that these parents were paying for their kids to go to the school, so wouldn't the tuition money have been set aside to upgrade and update and do those things? Right. I mean, that would be... And so part of the challenge for some of the parents this year, myself being one of them, was there were a lot of people who in the summer thinking about moving our sons. Are we going to put them in the county school? You know, are we going to go back to North Cross? What are we going to do? And, you know, got all these calls from school administration and everybody, oh, no, we've handpicked the staff there. It's going to be great. And we're bringing back the aerospace. I'm like, it's now February and nothing has happened with aerospace at the school.
I mean, but how are they going to bring back the aerospace when they can't even run the school properly? I mean, that's a crazy thing to tell people when you've had all this turmoil.
Right.
Well, again, I think if you want to, like, again, where the buck stops.
Right.
You know, yes, to a degree, you look at the local level, 60% of it is easily that, and probably another 20% statewide. And then that last 20%... And then you see this nationally in any trend. Here's where education spiked in the Clinton years. Here's where it crashed and burned during the Bush era. Here's where it starts to slow climb back up during Obama. And guess what? Betsy DeVos, that wonderful,
expert,
caring Republican donor.
She loves the children.
With her, you know, vampire background in education.
Yeah,
it's sloping off again, and it's because, you know, in 2016, the panic. I mean, I made a full time living being freelance, doing work just for nonprofits prior to 2016. Mm-hmm. And everyone got their budgets slashed. And those nonprofits across the board and education across the board. And a lot of them, even before the cuts happened, started rolling things back because they knew we got a Republican president and here's what's about to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. And so I think some of those initiatives and whatever else, it's a travesty because, again, of all the things we know that work, and I'm going to keep repeating this over and over and over, education is really the only thing that can raise the economy, that can boost quality of life, and then can fix your town, state, country, whatever. But again, to institute a college like Virginia Western or the kind of programs that like the city school, it takes a long time. Yes. Politicians don't want to run on it because it takes usually more than 2 years, usually more than 4 years, and you can't go, hey, look what I did. Mm-hmm. Right. Sometimes people care about that.
Yeah.
But again, it gets lost on the wayside, and because we got to fight about abortion and transgender bathrooms and you name it, guns and all the other BS that actually don't fix or do anything or change anything in the way that education does. And again,
right,
it's a nonpartisan issue because education helps everyone.
Right. It's the great equalizer.
Like again, with the with the privatization of things, unless you're the person who's making money off it or the people you don't want educated.
So I want to go back, though, to when you had the community meeting and the strategic planning. I'm going to make this assumption that nobody from the school board came.
They did not come to the first part, but they did come to the actual meeting.
They came to the actual meeting. What has their response been to that?
More lip service than anything.
Okay.
They sat in and they took notes, and I just assumed them to be spies for the collective.
Okay.
There was also a city councilman who came in and sat in the back, and at not one point, because we opened the meeting by allowing parents to have the opportunity to air their grievances, at not one point does he stand up and say, you know, I'm here, let's talk, no, anything. And so in my mind, what I surmised was they were there to come in to be the saviors if it had been just this angry meeting that wasn't, mm-hmm. you know, that got out of control, so that they could have the face to say, well, I was there and I pulled it through. But none of them wanted to actually answer a question.
Well,
you are elected to serve the people.
Right.
And you if you're not serving the people, then what is it that you're doing?
And so the response that we've had from outside organizations in the community has been wonderful,
mm-hmm.
but not much from anybody in the city.
It's okay. Good to know.
Well, you know, this has been fascinating. We actually extended this conversation on our podcast because I think it's important and relevant to what's going on in our city. And Reverend McNeil, I appreciate you coming on board, coming on to talk about this, to provide very detailed and specific information about what is going on in Addison, and also about how the inner workings of what's going on in our school system. I think I've learned a lot about what you just said today. I'm totally taking it to heart, what you said. And I do want to say this to you, because you have been very outspoken about this, which to me is good. I always say, for people who are outspoken, being a person who sometimes is out there as well, be careful. Just always look around you, because there's people who, obviously there's reasons why things are happening.
Absolutely.
And it is keep happening. And so obviously they don't want that system or structure to keep to be stopped. And so I do urge you to continue to keep your voice in there, and always know you're always welcome to come back here and give us updates about what's going on.
Absolutely.
To make sure that we get out there. That's the importance of what we do here. So
yeah, and also, Reverend, thank you, because providing the voice for a bunch of people who don't know how to advocate for themselves and being that advocate, I think is very admirable. And again, I met you when you were working for Youth Build, and so the entire every time Reverend pops up and I see him, he's advocating for people in a way that creates that positive change, and then for people again who don't always know how to fix those things.
Right.
So thank you for all your hard work.
Thank you. Well, you know, again, we went over, but we do have time to wrap up by saying, as we look forward to next week, what are you guys looking forward to? Catherine, at first we need to give a shout out to Catherine Strongberg, who couldn't make it today because of a sick daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So I really hope that her daughter is feeling better, and she definitely wanted to be here for this important conversation. I know she was actually bummed that she couldn't be here. She actually said she was bummed that she wasn't able to talk with you about this. So Karen, what are you looking forward to this upcoming week?
So there are a couple of things happening. For many of you, we take the podcast on Tuesday and we post it on Thursday, sometimes Friday. But Tuesday, today, there's two big things going on, and I'm sure one of them Reverend McNeil will talk about. But today is going to be the first day of the governor's listening tour about African American history being taught in schools. And right. So that's going to be today in Roanoke at the Harrison at 6, but then it'll be in Danville and then two other stops this week. So what I'm looking forward to is hearing kind of the outcomes of that, finding out what that committee's been working on. And then also this Saturday, my church, the Roanoke District of the United Methodist Church, is going to be having a racial and reconciliation conference. And so I am looking forward to some of the healing that still has to happen within my own denomination, my own church. So just two things that are happening and going on.
Cool. Will?
Oh, I never know. And then if I do know, then I get the date wrong or the location wrong. Or I'm like, I can't wait till we impeach the president.
Well, that's pretty much over now.
I am looking forward to seeing how New Hampshire goes. Yeah. I think Iowa was such a mess. And, you know, those fears that I think a lot of people have if you're a Bernie Sanders supporter keep cropping up with stuff with like Pete Buttigieg right now, where, well, we don't know if he won or not correctly, but we're just going to give him all the votes, delegate votes anyways, because why not?
Have you made a decision yet?
No, I mean, I'm going to support whatever Democratic president is, and I don't think there should be as much infighting. And I also think that, again, the best thing they can do is all be on board with each other and go, listen, you might not love Steyer, what's his name? Again, I always forget. Steyer, who's the...
Tom Steyer.
Tom Steyer. That was
but listen, okay. He's probably not going to be president.
Right.
But he will probably be the head of the EPA if any of us become president.
True.
You got such a good slate of people up here.
Right.
You're going to be fine, and actually think they're going to be much, much better. Mm-hmm. But instead, it's just like, well, I don't know about Joe Biden and Pete, you know, this, and you're too moderate or progressive or what. Who cares? just win the election. You know, again, I think the interesting thing that I'm looking forward to is how that plays out. You know, Bernie Sanders said a very smart thing the other day. We're like, but you're a democratic socialist. And he's like, yeah, kind of. I mean, but Trump's also a socialist. The difference is I want to give money back to the people as where he wants to give it to billionaires and corporations and all these people who don't need it. So, yeah, I mean, we're all socialist.
Well, you. When's the New Hampshire primary?
Today.
Is it today?
No, yeah. Today.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is it really?
It is today.
Oh,
yes.
Wow. Okay. Yes. Well, we'll know today.
But March 3rd
is Super Tuesday.
Yes.
So that'll be interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, Reverend McNeil, what are your thoughts? What are you looking forward to this week?
Just as she stated, the superintendent search. It's tonight.
Well, 7:00. It's actually going to be on my calendar. I was going to go to another event, but because of what you just said today, I'll be there.
Is there more than one event?
There is.
Because this will air on a Thursday.
Yeah. Well, there's another event today, isn't it?
No, the
governor's listening thing is today.
It's
I think
today.
It's 6.
Yeah,
it's
6. But for the community meeting for the superintendent, this is the only one that's on the calendar right now.
Yeah, that's on the that's today.
That's tonight.
But you know,
but there's a survey.
Right, the survey is online. Right. People can take the survey, mm-hmm. and so we're trying to get as many people as possible to go online, take the survey, to flood them with the information.
Mm-hmm. Well, and anytime council's in session, you can go sign up to speak in front of council.
Yes.
So if it's something that matters to you, you know, get to one of the city council meetings and let them know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so then on Thursday, there are two things going on Thursday. We're having another meeting at 6 at the school at Lucy Addison. The PTSA is hosting another meeting, inviting people to come in to work on some solutions. But also then the Evan Springs meeting is at 7 on Thursday.
Yes.
And so that is at Williams Memorial.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so we're asking people, you know, to balance the time
yeah.
between the two. And we'll probably be ending at 7, so I'll probably want to go straight to the other. Right. But those are two big things. And then Saturday, it's going to be hopefully a fun day for me because I'll be up at Virginia Tech with my sons for the Uplifting Black Men's Conference.
Yes, it is this weekend.
Well, I did not get a chance to go with them last year because I was traveling. but try to go with them the last 3 or 4 years. So
yeah, I think I did attend that.
Yeah, you went last
I did,
year.
I did go. I did go
yeah, that's
last
just such
year.
A phenomenal.
It is. It
event.
Is absolutely
so good for our young men.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the you said most of the things I was going to say, Reverend McNeil, but I do want to add that this weekend also, I believe that William Fleming is the HBCU
fair. The college,
oh,
fair.
College fair
as well. I know, being a graduate of Hampton University, one of the finest African-American colleges in this country, I must say.
No bias at all.
And Karen is rolling her eyes as I'm speaking this. But anyway, it is it is a college fair. So I'm always encouraging students who are interested in, and I think you get a very different experience when you college is important.
Yes.
College mm-hmm. is important, regardless of what college, but usually being an African American, going to a HBCU, you get a different type of experience, which I think will create life experiences mm-hmm. down the road.
Yeah.
So that is happening at William Fleming. I don't really have the time, but I believe it's between 10 and 4 or something like that. So, but I'm very hopeful that if anyone's interested in their kids going to college, to check that out. So, but you mentioned Evan Springs again. That is something that is going to be continually to grow with fervor as we get through. I don't know if the zone, they denied the zoning, didn't they?
No,
they didn't.
It's
no,
not.
No.
It wasn't on the last planning okay. agenda. So it's probably on the second Monday, so
I think there's going to be more hopefully this is the first of many conversations in the community, conversations on Evan Springs. So mm-hmm. we look forward to that. And then I am looking forward to, as they move down to South Carolina, to me South Carolina I think me is the telltale sign of where we're at as far as this primary.
Oh. Sure. Presidential. I was like, who's going to South Carolina?
Well, no, I'm talking about, excuse me, the presidential.
Just go to Myrtle Beach.
Yeah, it'll be another presidential primary. I think, and because I think that is the litmus test, because that would be the, I believe that would be the first time that when we're really engaging other diverse communities involved in the process.
Well, how do you guys feel about that? Because, you know, on one hand, you look at Iowa, you look at South Carolina, for example, they're not your traditional voters, right? You know, it's a very moderate level of 97% white Democrats
yeah,
in Iowa.
Mostly white, yeah.
And then again, they use South Carolina to look at the black vote. And I don't, is that a fair way to judge things? Because you're going to need to rely on moderate and swing votes?
No, I don't think, first of all, I really don't think if we're going to start the primary system, I mean, season, Iowa should not be number one, shouldn't be the first one, to me.
I don't think it will be next time.
Or I would rather, if Iowa is going to be the first one, there needs to be another state that's like maybe Iowa and South Carolina can be on the same day.
Right. Yeah.
You know
so
what
you
I mean?
Have some kind of balance.
Like something that does that. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I think that we should do something with that change. So again, I do look forward to that. But again, this was a fantastic podcast.
Yes.
Thank you
so
very
much.
Very informative.
Thanks for coming.
Which means we probably need to bring more guests.
Oh, yes.
Or we bring different knowledges of it, because this was fantastic. So again, thank you, Reverend McNeil,
for
joining us. Thank you. And also our listeners. And thank you for listening to Our Voices, Our Community, presented by Colors VA Magazine. Today's episode is sponsored by Crandall and Cott, Attorneys at Law. You can also listen to us each Sunday at 3 p.m. on WROE 95.7. Radio Free Roanoke.
RadioFreeRoanoke.org.
I love saying it. If you like what you've heard today, leave us a review. Also, be sure to like Our Voices, Our Community on Facebook. Thank you and have a blessed day.